Today, hello, I'm from the government and I'm here to help you. Honest. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Well, there's posts covering finance and property news. Well, it's raining announceables at the moment, with interesting developments this past week on the housing and finance front, as city, state and federal governments continue to poke at the broken system. Schemes include government buying off the plan to give construction firms a leg up, cheap housing for essential workers, changes to lending rules, higher council rates for investors, and further crackdowns on Airbnb. Now, while these may sound attractive from a media positioning perspective, they will hardly move the dial on the broken housing system in Australia. It's a case of fiddling while Rome burns. And in fact, for more on the broken system, join me on my live show next Tuesday evening at 8 p.m. Sydney time, when I'll be joined by Leith Van Onselen, the chief economist at Nucleus Wealth, as we discuss the great housing poker game. In terms of announceables, though, there were some doozies. For example, as reported in the SMH, the New South Wales Labor government will look to buy houses off the plan to give lenders, developers and builders the confidence to fund and start construction and speed up the delivery of thousands of new homes as the state braces to meet ambitious housing targets. Bottlenecks in the planning system, the increased costs of building materials, labour shortages and access to finance are slowing the construction of homes in New South Wales at the same time as the state needs to build 75,000 homes new each year. The New South Wales government wants to give lenders confidence to lend and so fast-track construction. In response, the government will invest in a new financing pilot, which will examine how the state can directly support the housing industry to secure finance, increasing the availability of housing projects and to fast-track the construction of new homes. Under the scheme, the government will pre-purchase a specified number of homes and consider whether it should act as a guarantor for some development loans when projects are assessed by financial institutions to satisfy debt requirements. Planning Minister Paul Scully has referred to the pilot as the government's version of the Bank of Mum and Dad, which would form another plank of the New South Wales government's drive to dramatically boost density. We've introduced one of the biggest programs of planning approval and rezoning reform in New South Wales history to approve more homes, but we need industry to start the work of building houses, he said. But getting approval is not the same as building a house, which requires finance, and the conversion of approvals into construction projects has slowed, with developers reporting challenges accessing finance, building materials, price increases and labour shortages. In fact, New South Wales Premier Chris Mims has said that housing affordability and availability were the biggest single pressure for people in New South Wales, with mortgage payments or rents the largest expense for most households, particularly for essential workers. And so, in another announcement, a $450 million investment will be made to build apartments for essential workers. That headlines the New South Wales government's budget strategy to tackle the housing crisis head on, as announcements flow thick and fast ahead of the Treasurer Daniel Mackay's budget. On Tuesday, he and Premier Chris Mims released details of plans to accommodate nurses, paramedics, teachers, allied healthcare workers, police officers and firefighters at subsidised rates. Landcom, the government's residential development arm, will buy up to four sites to build more than 400 new build-to-rent dwellings in the next 3 years. Mims said that New South Wales would grind to a halt without nurses, paramedics, teachers, police officers and firefighters, but many can't afford a place to live in Sydney close to where they work. This has to change. We're pulling every lever we have to tackle the housing crisis, and one of the best ways to make rentals more affordable is to build more homes. Landcom will begin detailed planning, and subject to approvals, work on the first site will begin in early 2026, with key workers able to move in from late 2027. Eligibility criteria, details on how to apply, and the rental subsidy will be available closer to the completion of the first project. Landcom will select sites with a preference for surplus government land identified as being suitable for housing in the specified locations, again to be determined. The government will retain ownership of the housing, with rental income available to help fund a potential future expansion of the program. And by the way, the government will also invest $8.4 million into the work of the rental commissioner to deliver investigators, inspectors, and support teams to engage with renters, target dodgy agents and actors on serious breaches of rental laws. The task force in fair trading, led by the commissioner, will be given a mandate to crack down on poor quality rentals and bad behaviour from agents and owners in the nation's biggest rental market. And funding of $2.5 million will help ensure compliance with the July 1 ban on the use, supply, and manufacture of engineered stone. And there will also be stronger regulation of all other materials containing crystalline silica. Oh, and the government has also asked the newly expanded Productivity and Equality Commission to review housing supply issues. Premier Chris Minns has tasked Commissioner Peter Akshastraat with investigating and providing evidence-based recommendations about the barriers impacting housing supply, including in the construction industry. In fact, they've already provided three reports over the last year, which the government says has provided crucial analysis of housing crisis, including one where he warned that if we don't act, we could become a city with no grandchildren. The next report is due at the end of August. And the government will also try to fast-track building approvals by spending $253 million in Tuesday's budget on more planners and technology to push applications through the planning system. Planning Minister Scully said that the investment would mean faster state rezonings and assessments, including for major renewable energy projects, an upgrade to the government's planning portal, which has been heavily criticised by sections of the building and development industry. And he said the extra investment will also help the government with its signature planning reforms, including the transport-orientated developments and the low and mid-rise programmes. This increased funding will allow the assessment of more housing and major projects within the Department of Planning, Housing and Infrastructure, so assessments are faster, more coordinated and efficient, Scully said. And we're also investing in the planning portal to address concerns users have identified and to continue to introduce artificial intelligence to assist in faster and more reliable assessment processes. Note the little AI name drop there. Now, at the federal level, the AFR reports that Treasurer Jim Chalmers will seek to boost the power of smaller regional banks as they struggle to compete against the big banks in mortgage lending through a regulatory review, which will focus on the higher funding costs of small and medium lenders. On Friday, Chalmers unveiled a range of planned competition changes to banking home loans and deposit products and a separate competition review of non-major lenders. Banks would be forced to make it easier for customers to switch home loans by ensuring that they have direct and easy access to discharge forms to exit on mortgage, he said. On deposit accounts, banks would be directed to tell customers where their interest rate changed. Regional banks such as Bank of Queensland has been struggling to compete against the big four banks, which have cheaper funding sources due to different capital rules, higher credit ratings, and assumptions that they're underwritten by the government in a financial crisis. The shake-up comes as Dr. Chalmers is still yet to make his national interest determination on ANZ Banking Group's proposed $4.9 billion takeover of Queensland insurer Suncorp's banking arm. The proposed deal has been dragging on for 2 years. It was announced in June 2022, rejected by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission in August 23, and approved on appeal by the Australian Competition Tribunal in March. Dr. Chalmers has the final say over Suncorp's bank ownership, and he'll be armed with advice from Treasury and the potential regulator. The approving Competition Tribunal found that the emergence of mortgage maverick Macquarie Bank and the increased use of mortgage brokers means that ANZ's long-argued takeover and Suncorp's banking arm would not hurt competition in home, business or agribusiness lending. Well, we'll see about that. ANZ welcomed the passage of legislation through the Queensland Parliament on Friday to facilitate ANZ's takeover of Suncorp. Completion of the acquisition remains subject to the commencement of the Act and approval by the Federal Treasurer, it said. And meanwhile, the Council of Financial Regulators and the ACCC will review challenges faced by small and medium banks following findings by an inquiry by the House of Representatives Economics Committee, led by Labor MP Daniel Molino. The review will focus on the role small and medium-sized banks play in providing competition in the sector and the regulatory and market trends affecting them, Chalmers said. It will propose ways to improve regulation and to ensure that oversight of those banks are appropriately balanced between competition, innovation and stability. Westpac Chief Executive Peter King told the AFR banking summit back in March that banking is a scale business because of the high fixed costs of digital technology and regulations for customers, cybersecurity, data protection, anti-money laundering rules, and counter-terrorism financing laws. We will see more banks, small mutuals get together because you've got to spread the big fixed costs of being a regulated ADI, that's the authorized deposit taking institution, across all its aspects and across customers, he said. And the government has not taken up a suggestion from Dr. Milano's report for borrowers to be offered home loans that track movements in the Reserve Bank of Australia cash rate. Bank analysts believe banks may withhold some portion of future interest rate cuts by the RBA to recover shrinking profit margins on home loans as a result of Macquarie Bank undercutting the Big Four lenders. In fact, Commonwealth Bank of Australia Chief Executive Matt Comyn began warning last year that banks were failing to recover the cost of their capital mortgages due to a price war led by ANZ. Mr. Comyn described the result of ANZ aggressively discounting home loans as the largest margin erosion in the history of Australian banks. The first RBA interest rate cut, by the way, is now priced into the middle of 2025, around the same time as a federal election due by May next year. And banking system profitability has declined slightly in 2023 due to slower loan growth and greater competition for mortgage lending and term deposits, according to the latest RBA's Financial Stability Review. Pressures on profitability are expected to remain in the coming year, the RBA noted. Net interest margin of the big banks combined declined to 1.79% in the first half of 2024, compared to 1.89% in the second half of 2023. And the financial regulators will examine options to lower the costs of wholesale funding for small and medium banks to compete against ANZ, CBA, NAB and Westpac. This includes exploring capital requirements and a government-backed home loan scheme using residential mortgage-backed securities like in Canada, which, similar to Australia, has a concentrated system of big banks. The Canadian government buys retail mortgage-backed securities from the banks, which reduces the cost of accessing funds for all banks, but disproportionately so for smaller banks. Through this public securitization of mortgages, Canada has a smaller margin between the interest rate banks charge on loans versus the interest rate banks pay out to depositors, Dr. Milano's report said. The limits on cheaper wholesale funding sources, known as covered bonds, which are secured against pools of residential mortgages, will also be considered. Dr. Chalmers said that the government would also work with banks to help improve how customers are notified about bonus interest rate offers when an introductory lower interest rate period ends, including through the potential development of industry standards. And the Treasury will also investigate how behavioural economics and prompting consumers could be used in the banking sector to encourage consumers to switch to cheaper home loans and other retail banking products. The deposit and the home loan changes come in response to two inquiries on deposits and home loans by the Australian Competition and Consumer Commission, launched by Dr. Chalmers and his predecessor, Josh Frydenberg. Dr. Chalmers also announced that financial product comparison websites would be required to better disclose what determines how products are ranked and the financial relationships they have with recommended product providers. Now, here's another beauty in terms of announceables from Melbourne, where Melbourne Independent Councillor James Conlon is asking Merriback Council to investigate how it could introduce a new differential rate for property investors in an effort to make more homes available to first home buyers. The average rates bill for a typical home in the area, which takes in suburbs such as Brunswick, Coburg, Fawkner, and Pascoe Vale, is around $1,800 a year and about $2,700 for non-residential properties such as shops, warehouses, and industrial sites. But under Conlon's proposal, investors who lease out a property in the municipality would have to pay an average of $3,600 per property, while owner-occupiers and small businesses would pay an average of $900 a year. Conlon told Garden Australia the goal of his proposal was to make investing in the areas less attractive. Isn't it a part of our national myth that everyone wants to own their own home? Well, here is the type of policies we need to do that, he said. The idea is that slowly over time, we would be able to change the composition of ownership from an investor environment to more owner-occupiers, which I think is what everybody wants. Conlon's motion claims that the vast majority of people who own two or more properties had a greater capacity to pay increased rates. Unlike owner-occupiers and renters, investors can sell at least one residential property without making themselves homeless. Ratepayers, unable to keep up with expenses associated with maintaining an investment property, may sell their investment properties, the motion says. It likens the proposal to the state government's increase in land taxes in last year's budget, which Conlon said had not led to an increase in rents. Now, if the motion succeeds, a report will be prepared by the council and presented to the council meetings in September. Another vote will then have to occur to make it council policy. And while local governments are able to set differential rates, a Merribeck officer's response to the motion cast doubts on whether it would be possible to introduce Conlon's proposal. It's very unlikely that it's feasible to apply a differential rate for property investors who have more than one residential property in Merribeck, given the legislative framework and guidelines that apply to local governments, the officer said. David Hayward, an emeritus professor of public policy and the social economy at RMIT University, said the plan was a terrific idea, but questioned how much of an effect it would really have on the market. There are so many variables. You could end up with a landlord that's willing to pay and then claim it at tax time. Another could sell, but then another landlord could buy it up, he said. But you would definitely see at least some sort of redistribution of existing supply. It would inevitably make it more of an even playing field for first-time buyers. Despite the reservations, Hayward praised Conlon for thinking outside of the box. But then Peter Tulip, chief economist at the Centre for Independent Studies, said the proposal was a bad idea as it rested on the assumption renters were in a position to buy a home. The average Melbourne property is about $1 million and a deposit value around $200,000. I'm sure renters with $200,000 in the bank will happily go off and buy a house if this were to happen, he said. But unfortunately, there are many renters who don't have $200,000 sitting in the bank, and they're going to be screwed. Instead, the policy would make the rental crisis in Merribeck much, much worse, as investors would sell off their properties in the municipality and opt for other suburbs nearby. It's a view shared by the Victorian director of the Property Council, Kath Evans, who said the proposal was a solid candidate for the worst policy initiative of the year and would drive up the costs for renters. She said that as at 2021, there were more than 26,000 households renting within Merribeck, making up to about 37% of all households in the municipality, well above the Melbourne average of 29%. These numbers have only grown in the last 3 years, meaning an even greater proportion of the council's residents are dependent on investors to provide affordable homes for them. And finally, in more announceables, Brisbane property owners will need to get a permit before renting out their house on Airbnb as the City Council tries to reduce the impact on housing supply. The Brisbane Lord Mayor, Adrian Scrimmer, outlined the plan after a year-long review of the sector. Scrimmer said the Council was set to introduce the permit system where a property could only function as an Airbnb if they had appropriate planning approvals in place, body corporate support, and a 24/7 property manager. Properties that did not meet that requirement for a permit will be forced to come back onto the long-term rental market to help meet the demand in Brisbane. If you are in an apartment building and your neighbour wants to switch over to short-stay accommodation, the body corporate doesn't have the power to effectively decide whether that can happen or not, Scrimmer said. And obviously people in a building will have a view on whether this is a good thing or not. At the moment, they don't have the power to stop it. And you've seen examples in some places where there's been real concerns and conflict in buildings as a result of this. So we need to work with the state government to get rules in place that will help regulate this to give body corporates more powers. Brisbane City Council already charges higher rates for short-stay accommodation, and Scrimmer says that they will raise those rates again. They're not using the house for standard residential purposes. They're using it effectively for a business purpose, he said. And so we've linked the rates then to more commercial rates. According to data analytics firm AirDNA, there are more than 10,000 properties in Brisbane used for short-stay accommodation. We've identified over 400 properties that need to come back into the long-term rental market, Scrimmer said. And he said he understood that demand for Airbnb-style accommodation, particularly ahead of the 2032 Olympics. However, there also needs to be property to support the long-term rental market. Brisbane is facing surging house prices. As the latest CoreLogic data revealed, it is now the second most expensive city in Australia to buy a house. The demand for rentals has also skyrocketed, with Brisbane facing a 0.9% vacancy rate and rent prices risen 9.3% over the past year. As the housing supply crisis wreaks havoc across Australia, other states such as New South Wales are considering introducing a short-term accommodation levy to encourage owners to put their properties back into the long-term market. And Victoria already has a 7.5% tax on Airbnbs. Strata Community Associate Queensland General Manager Laura Boss backed the council plan, but she said she believed that the higher priority was for statewide reform to the Body Corporate and Community Management Act. This would allow, amongst other things, body corporate committees to pass a bylaw prohibiting or restricting short-stay accommodation for non-owner occupiers, she said. And short-term rental provider Stays also urged the council to wait for statewide reform. In response to the Brisbane City Council proposal to introduce a new permit on short-term rental accommodation providers, Stays encourages the council to wait for what we understand will be a state-led regulatory regime being implemented, a senior director of Government and Corporate Affairs, Etienne Curry, said. So there you have it, a whole litany of announceables, which really are pointing to the symptoms of the property crisis and offers very little in terms of the key solutions that we need. If you want to discuss that more, check out the show on Tuesday. Now, if you're buying your home in Sydney's contentious market, you don't need to stand alone. This is the time you need to have Edwin Almeida from Ribbon Property Consultant standing alongside you. Buying a property is both challenging and adversarial. The vendor has a professional on their side. Emotions run high, price discovery and price transparency are hard to find, and then there's the wasted time and financial investments that you make. Edwin understands your needs, so why not engage a licensed professional to stand alongside you? With RPC, you know you have experience, knowledge, and master negotiators looking after your best interests. So shoot Ribbon an email at info@ribbonproperty.com.au. And if you use the promo code DFAWTW/Martin, you can get a 10% discount offer. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.